Hi, Hami. Today we have a very interesting topic. But before that, how are you?
good. Now we are in a little bit of a heat wave here in Ireland. So it's unusually warm, but other than that, it's all grand.
It's actually terribly warm. I can't sleep at night. But look, that's another conversation, maybe climate change as a topic. But I think the topic today we have is the good, the bad, and the ugly of real estate, buying, selling, or even renting in Ireland, particularly with a focus on Dublin.
Hi, welcome to Wrong Side of Life.
I'm Sana Khan.
And I'm Jaime Huerta.
We're friends and we thought about recording our chats.
Just because it seems like fun.
We talk about all kinds of things like society.
Tech, laws, zombies.
Zombies, food.
Of course, food.
Okay, so Hami, I think the first thing to start off about is you have bought something in Ireland, a house, right? An apartment. Please
yes.
Let me know how you felt about the process.
The process was incredibly frustrating and long and horrible, right? Like, for everyone to know, prices, the property in general, right, real estate in Ireland at the moment is very high. High prices. Rent is very complicated and, you know, it's generally quite expensive to get. And buying a house is also very, very expensive as well, right? Like the prices went up in the last 10 years. I don't know, since I've lived in Ireland, there has always been growing up, right?
Yeah.
Probably I came anyway around, you know, big recession and everything. So it was like lowest point,
yes.
But they quickly catch up, right?
Yeah.
And especially with renting, you know, I saw that the prices were going up. So in my case, what happened was that I was renting in the same house for a few years, right? I had a good relationship with the landlady and everything, but they told me like, okay, we are going to sell the house because we need the money. So we are giving you 6 months to leave the house, right?
Yeah.
So, which is totally their right to do. So I started searching for that. I had to, you know, pull some strings to try to get enough money for down payment for a house. And then it took me 6 months just from starting, meaning someone said, okay, you now have to start looking until I moved to the house, right? Which it was in my case, it was like extremely good timing because I moved to the house a week before we went in lockdown.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Which is...
And that is an exceptionally good timing because I was on the other end of the spear in that we had this house sorted. I think we placed the offer was accepted formally in 2019. And we only got the contract finalized in October 2020. So.
Whoa.
And in our case, even though there were two lawyers, a barrister and a solicitor involved, there were some specific nuances in the contract. And so there were some problems in the title documents, but that was ultimately shed clear. So we actively were involved in the purchase of the property because we were able to understand the legal terms. And I kept saying to my husband, saying, could you imagine if this was somebody who had no legal knowledge and this is the time frame that is going through? It's frustrating as hell. The uncertainty is huge because the thing about in Ireland is unless you formally sign a contract, the other side can always pull out. And so you may have been waiting or giving your notice in whatever place you have left, waiting for the contract to be signed and executed. But that can always be cancelled.
Yeah.
And that's the problem where you have no certainty. So, you know, the contract was a big thing. So there were times we thought we weren't going to get the house because of the legal implications and the fact that we were literally being actively involved. And in fairness, my solicitor was fantastic. It was just that the other side solicitor is known to be particularly lazy. It's pretty much reputable in the law society, but in my own experience, having dealt with him a few times on different property purchases, rental agreements, all these, he seems to be very lackadaisical. So he didn't have certain maps of the property because this was the house we're buying, which includes, you know, management companies, all these details to see who has right of roads, all of these things. And apparently he just had a very poor record management system, and you know, we had to formally reach out to the property register to get copies of the original maps to be able to make these decisions. And because of COVID-19, it made it even more difficult. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is, you know, things weren't like a big problem, but it was like simple things were overtly complicated because there was no real transparency. It was just, you still have to go through one solicitor over another. And some people would say, well, why can't you or your husband in a legal do it? It's not. You're not legally permissible to do your own property transaction. That's why we had to go and utilize, a previous colleague of my husband who he knew was very good with detail. I mean, in fairness to her, she was fantastic with the detail. You know, we've decided she's going to be utilized for any other legal issue because, you know, she was on top of it. It was just the other side solicitor didn't have his documents in order. And then COVID-19 and having to really wait for formal copies of documents and maps to be provided was an endless saga. So from our perspective, it was a horrendous experience. But even though it was very frustrating because we knew what was the problem, but there was nothing we could do to control. And that's why I kept saying, how would somebody find who didn't have the legal knowledge? You know, you go up and down.
No, to me, for example, it was quite complicated. Like, well, first of all, obviously it was my first time that I did something similar to that. There's a lot of details that you need to learn and everything. And also the process, you know, because I found that it was different from the process that happens in Spain. Works a little bit like this, right? Just to describe it from start to end, right? First of all, once you realize, okay, I would like to buy a house, right? And I want to, because I want to move, or, you know, perhaps I'm old enough to have my own house or whatever. The first thing to do is to try to get a pre-approval for your mortgage, right? So you do a little bit of research to say, okay, how much I am thinking that is going to be like a house on the characteristics that I want, or how much can I afford or whatever. With that idea, rough idea in mind, you go to your bank or different banks saying, okay, I would like to apply for a mortgage here. And I would like to have it to this amount, right? Roughly. To me, one thing that is interesting is that you do that before you know the house, in particular the specific house, right? So you try to find out what is the price, right? Before applying to a particular house, right? You have a process that, in my case, it took, I think, around 2 months to get, or perhaps a month and a half, to get the pre-approval of the mortgage, right? So basically what they say is you have to present the documentation, where are you working, your income, you know, do you have other loans, all that kind of information. You pass that and they say, okay, this is my information, right, on that. And then the bank has to go through a lot of different process to try to say, okay, you are suitable for a mortgage or not. Once they decide whether yes or no, or what they tell you the amount, right? So you're able to withdraw a mortgage of X, right? Whatever X, depending on how much do you earn and everything. If you go with your spouse or your significant other and both are you going to be contributing, you add that and everything. But that one, you know, that's the first stage. The second step is that you and they also will get you the rate of the mortgage, right? Which is also important if you want to compare or see which one you prefer to go with, your bank, another bank, or whatever. And then you start looking for a house, right? So they approve that normally for 6 months or 1 year. Normally 1 year, right? Like normally they will allow you 1 year and say, okay, you're approved for 1 year. Now go and search whatever house you like, right? Then you start looking at houses, right? Which I'm pretty sure that everyone, you know, it's a more straightforward thing. You go to certain online place and you say, okay, I would like to see in this area this amount of money. these characteristics or whatever. You go to open plan, you see a couple of houses. And when you're interested in one, you send a message saying like, okay, I'm interested in this one. I can do an, you do an offer, right? Like you say, okay, I can offer you blah, which also takes like a month for them to decide the offer, which is another thing that is interesting, right? Because you submit the offer and then they tell you, okay, yeah, offer received, but maybe there's someone else that is interested in the house, right? They never confirm yeah. who's interested in the house. Perhaps if you put more money, it will be great, right? So they try to get you more money. And actually, when I put an offer for the apartment that I bought, I was thinking that perhaps I will be outbidded, right? On that, but I was not, right? But the whole process, since we put the... because it's very fast from the moment that you see the house
yeah.
till you get the... they decide that your bidding is the winning bid and you put money, up front yeah. to secure the bid.
Deposit.
It took... Yeah, the deposit, exactly. Thank you. It took me like, I think a month, 3 weeks or a month. To for them to come back to you to say, okay, mm-hmm. yeah, actually your bid was the winning one, right? So
yeah.
Send me the deposit here.
Okay.
Right? By then you send the deposit and then you start the process of getting your solicitor, right? Like probably you have been looking for a solicitor at the moment or trying to find one that is by recommendation, right? Like I mm-hmm. imagine that's what I did. Like ask people that were recently involved into that and say, okay, what was your solicitor? Are you happy with that? Etc. You go there, you start all the process, then they have to, you contact them with the people in the agency. Normally it's an agency selling, and they start contacting with the other part, right? And another thing that was interesting for me is that you never see the other part, right? Like I never talked to anyone. Right? Mm-hmm. It was basically the solicitor taking care of everything, but I never went there for a person to say, okay, yeah, I lived here or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It was completely, completely detached. And then you start also a dance of trying to close it, and at the same time you need to do your due diligence to find out that the house is in good condition, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
normally you make
surveys or
yeah, survey that is yeah. You pay someone to go there to see mm-hmm. okay, is there any structural damage? Is there something that I need to know? Right, the pipes are in bad shape, or there's something that is clearly obvious. Now, I think it's very difficult to find something that is super, like it's not going to be nitpicking details, right? It's going to be more like, is the house going to fall over
in
3 months or not?
Because no house is perfect. It's one thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it depends, really depends on, for an apartment, it's probably less difficult because it's, it's an apartment, like what are you going to do? But at the same time, if you have something like a house, I know that, they got the problem that it was a very old house and then it has, it has asbestos, so that asbestos has to go before we finish mm-hmm. the process. So you can find out something and go to the seller to say, look, I found out this, you need to fix it before I'm going to sell it, or you just withdraw from the process, right?
Yeah.
Because perhaps there's a problem with that. And after you do all that, right, there's then sort of a race between solicitors trying to finalize all the details, right? Normally they try to get something from the other part that they don't have, and then you have perhaps to help with some documentation, et cetera, et cetera, until, everything matches. And then there's a particular day that, you sign everything. And normally in my case, it was just the afternoon I got the keys for the house, right?
And how long was the time frame? So was the longest time just to get the mortgage approval essentially with the bank, or was it, what was the time frame from when you got mortgage approval to finding the place and then getting the legal works done and everything?
So the finding the place was the fastest, because really so I wanted to be in the same area that I've been living for the previous years, so I sort of knew the area and I knew more or less what is a good house and the price, right?
Like yeah,
more
yeah.
or less I had an idea, right?
Because so, you were familiar with the area.
Yeah, with the area and everything, and the fact that we wanted an apartment right here in Ireland, normally people want houses.
Yeah.
It makes the thing a little bit easier because there's less offer, right? So it's less things that you will look at. And so I watched a few houses, but not too many. So I was sort of liking it, you know, in the very first things. And I came with my wife and she also liked it and everything. So that part was relatively fast. The longest was from the point that, so I think it was like early December, the offer was accepted and the keys was done at the start of March. So yeah. 3 months. I think three full months. So that was the longest. The longest was actually like finalizing the thing, like
finalizing the mortgage. And yours was a standard, you know, apartment purchase, which means there's lots of agreements available in terms of previous property. So the title documents weren't an issue, but it still takes a 3 month time frame.
Yeah, yeah, and it was basically like legal paperwork, right? Like, yeah. And survey. Like the survey was done at the end of December.
Yeah.
Probably the fact that the Christmas went in the way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it probably was a little bit like, okay, yeah, well, we got a couple of weeks that things stop, and you know, like the survey could have been done a couple of days earlier, and then another thing. But in general, it was just like, yeah, like okay, why this is not done? Oh, yeah, because they need to send us a map of some kind or agreement on that. Or because, for example, one thing that is interesting is the fact that when you're buying an apartment in Ireland, you're not really buying the land, right?
No. Like exactly.
You're buying, you're buying in Spain, for example, you buy the land, right? Like the you own the part of the land that corresponds, right? Like in like a proportional part of the land, but here not. You just rent the land for a few hundred years, which is quite interesting. So my solicitor want to confirm the time, right? Because it's not, because it's not the same thing. Like you got a 500 years
lease arrangement.
Lease arrangement, which is, you know, basically like all the time of the world, right? Like you're going to survive for 500 years.
And your generations, you know, if you're buying something, you'd be thinking about generations.
And neither your grandkids, right? If you want if they want to inherit the house. So it's probably more time than the time that the house is going to be built.
Yeah.
But apparently there's other ones that are like 100 years. So probably 100 years for me is fine. But, you know, if I want to give that as inheritance for someone, they need to be aware of that. I think
because that loses the value of it, because you then have to buy and engage in a contractual agreement, which is why, you know, just as a side point, Hamid, you know, when you go to London and you see these really fancy apartments and you're like, oh my gosh, they're bargain. It's only like £250,000 for one bed studio apartment in Hyde. And then you look at the lease arrangement, 5 years left in the lease. So it's basically saying, you know, you can buy this house, but in 5 years' time, you have to enter into kind of a contractual payout and come up with terms. And that's not a pleasant experience at all. So you can see why the property prices do go down in that instance for the lease.
And what happens if you get out of time and you get that? Will the building be demolished? Or, you know, if you don't get an agreement on...
I think you'll probably go to court in it, because you still have a property, the physical item there, but there hasn't been. So you probably need to get a mediator, an arbitrator, in my experience. Like, it doesn't just kind of end unless you're comfortable walking away with it, because in theory, it's like a car park. Your car is yours, but if you don't pay your car park fees, they can repossess it. And they can occupy it. So it's, I think, in the same instance, from what I believe with the lease arrangements. That's why they try to say, particularly in England and Ireland, if possible, trying to get a freehold, because it means that the land you are built on is belonging to you. So you don't have to go to this. So I think from our perspective, when we're looking at it, we looked at the house, because there's a car park, two car parks for the front of the house, and at the back, it's a garden, so it's freehold. So that's the biggest thing that attracted us, that we don't have to go through this endless cycle. Even if there was like 500 years, you know, it's fine if you have that kind of time frame, or 999, which is a standard thing. But you'd find that a lot of the new build properties, they make it into a lease as opposed to freehold arrangement. So that means that the builders or the contractors and are essentially a pipeline of investment opportunities in probably 2-3 1,000 years' time. I know we're talking excessive, but that's what seems to be the preference in this day and age now, even for new houses, Hammy. So apartments were traditionally in Ireland and England the case where the land underneath the apartment didn't belong or you didn't have a share of it, unlike in Spain. But now they're beginning to go more in towards houses being like that as well, because there's some sort of, I don't know, for it could be lots of reasons, but me looking at this from a layperson, maybe it's protecting the management company or the builders have some sort of, or the county council maybe have sold the land. I don't know. It may have the interest and for the foreseeable future. And it's not future.
that controversial, because so one thing that I found out when I got here, right, like and is that Irish people is extremely sensitive to problems with land, right? In because of historical reasons, like in forgetting like a you know very short description of that. In the 19th century, there was like a lot of problems with landlords that weren't physically in Ireland, right? And a lot of evictions and problems and everything. And given that it was in the time of the famine and everything, that was is something like very ingrained into this is something that can't happen, right? It's very much like, oh, there was a big injustice in 100 years ago and we don't want to get that. And that's why when the housing crisis happened in Ireland, there was a huge amount of protest against evictions and things like that. Because it's something considered, you know, like in the collective emotion of the country, right? Like something very bad, like having a landlord, an evil landlord that owns the land and forces people to get out of that and everything. So
I imagine that. The caveat is just to landlords aren't all evil. Some of them have put all their money in investments, but the mind frame is
I'm putting that a little bit like a, you know, to simplify that, right? It's a shortcut to that, right?
But Hammy, you're perfectly fine. You know, I totally agree with, you know, that there had to be some sort of rent control during COVID-19. Because people lost jobs. But that also meant that the landlords who may be small homeowners who may have saved up money instead of going on holidays for years said, let's buy a property because Dublin brings good yields. They're also affected. It's not like the evil institutional investors. Yeah, right. So I don't think the media still plays, oh, landlords are evil. And that's what the Irish media does do, Hammy. So that's the perfect summary. And I think it's a very much frustrating because a lot of people just say, oh, they're all evil and greedy. No, everything that the landlord personally obtains is 52% taxed or more. Yeah. So,
yeah, but my point is that, you know, like it's the kind of thing that I will imagine that people will be very much against to say, okay, I actually bought the land. Right, bought my house and I have the own to be there, but the land is not mine, right? Like I think that will be something that for a lot of Irish people will be very difficult to, you know, they will be very much against, just as a matter of principle, saying like, okay, actually I own this, right? Like this is my land.
And I think that's a good point, but you have to understand, as you know, the demand outreaches or outweighs the availability of the property. So Hammy, if you want to be like that, nobody's forcing you to buy this property, but I have five other people down the road wanting to buy. And so why not make it leased? So I think the introduction of the leasehold arrangement for at least the new built houses, I get the apartment aspect of it, right? It's been like that for quite some time in Ireland, right? But when the houses, as you say, you know, it's something that you wouldn't have thought about. And even just the whole concept of management fees for house blocks beforehand, you know, you didn't have them. People would come together and say, okay, let's, or the county council will be looking after the roads. Now, you know, new houses have to pay management fees. These management fees were traditionally a concept of apartment blocks because, you know, you're all sharing the common lift.
Yeah, you have the lift, you have common areas, etc. Yeah.
But that's now introduced for new build properties as well. So I think, Hammy, it's copying what's happening in England. A lot of the new build properties are leaseholds in England, and they all, you know, kind of do management fees of some shape or format. So I think Ireland is trying to follow that. And I think the reason why there's less scrutiny on this, or why, as you mentioned, you know, I think if you go to the west of Ireland, people want to own their land wholeheartedly. So the freehold aspect, particularly in the older properties, as in not the new build properties that can avail of the first time buyers allowance, is usually for new properties and you must be first time buyers, right? I think in that instance, if people are more willing to accept it because they're just sick and tired of waiting to find a property that they can, live off. And, you know, the prices that they probably would pay in mortgage is probably half what they would be paying for the rent. Mm-hmm. Like they may be paying 2,000, a couple maybe staying with another couple, and they're probably paying 2,000 euro for a two-bedroom, two-bath apartment. But their mortgage mm-hmm. for a three-bedroom house, even if they buy it for 350 or 400 or even 500, could be 1,500, 1,600, but they have the full scope of use of the house. They have three four bedrooms, bathrooms, they have their own kitchen, probably a study area and a garden that they consider a patio. So, you know, it's more cost effective if you actually buy your property than mm-hmm. having to rent, because there's such a dirt in the rental property out there, and all the jobs still seem to be in Dublin. And I know, you know, they're trying to make it into a way that the rest of Ireland will be an attractive proposition for people to work in. And I think COVID-19 has shown that. But if you've mm-hmm. seen since COVID-19, property prices across Ireland has increased, because now people are probably saying, you know, let's move back to our home country, and we kind of use the remote working arrangement, because even the government has issued guidelines and encouraged to kind of utilize remote working, particularly with the national broadband plan that is trying to mm-hmm. increase internet connectivity in remote parts of Ireland so that people can have proper access to internet and communications, and therefore you can. So it's actually pushed up the property market as opposed to putting it down.
Yeah,
around Ireland, and there's still a lot of properties not around there, because if you go to the countryside, what you find is houses are inherited to the elder son. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, for the traditionally all the land was given to the eldest son. But I think now things are changing, because people are all like, well, don't forget about me, you know. So that whole tradition of giving the oldest son, the most is changing. But the point being is, like, you know, somebody in the family would take the property. And it was only if mm-hmm. that person is selling the property that you get those houses on the market. So you can see, even to buy the secondary market houses, there's not a lot, because a lot of people are like, well, you know, it's mine now. We're going to live it, use it at our holiday home, use my kids can use it as a base. So you don't see properties coming up to on sale, because they always are kept in the family. So that's also increasing the demand and the need. So you find people then going back to the new build properties and houses in these areas.
Yeah, and another thing that happens is that normally in other countries, so very recently in Ireland, they introduced the concept of a property tax, right? Like if you have a house, you have to pay every year for a tax, right? For a long, long time, there was nothing on that. And it has been recently included, but obviously has some exceptions, and it has a lot of resistance against that, right? Like it's the kind of tax, again, I think that rubs in the wrong way a lot of people because of that, because it's like... I think there's a big push for owning the houses, right? Like not being
landlord. I don't like property taxes. I'm like, I'm paying enough taxes as it is. Yeah. And now that I've saved so hard to buy a property, you're making me charge more money on it, you know?
Yeah, but the fact is that the property tax, right, it has an effect on sometimes with people that, you know, they're old and, you know, perhaps they had three kids and the kids grow old and whatever, they have a big house. They're not going to move, right? Because it's basically, it's completely paid and it's the house and everything, right? While if you have a little bit of property tax, perhaps it's like, okay, I'm paying too much. I may move to a smaller place, right? Yeah. To keep it and everything. So there's a lot of houses that are basically very big, but are occupied by an old couple, right? That
people are saying kick out the, I'm sorry, no.
It should be.
If that old person wants to burn their house down without causing harm to the environment and breaching, they can. Because people are thinking that, and that's what really frustrates me. The older people got their house, whether they worked hard for it or they got inheritance, is what happens in Ireland, right? Everybody's mm-hmm. waiting for the parents to even give them the house or whatever. Right. But the point is, why are you pushing, you know, when people are saying that there's a lot of old people living in these nice Georgian houses in Dublin that you can divide into flats or apartments? It's like, how would you feel if I came in and told you what to do with your property that you've saved and lived and worked on? It's not like you've, you know, stolen from somebody, but they tell you what to do. How would you feel? People forget about that.
I think that, you know, as many things in economics, right, and everything, it's not a matter of going there and putting a regulation that it mandates you to do something, right? It's
but about people creating... But how many people were talking about this as an option to push? And I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, and that never works, right? Like, because the problem with that is that you put certain incentives that are not great, right, in that, and there's a lot of control on that, and you know, it's very difficult, but you can create certain incentives, right, to say, okay, if you want to get to that, and you have a big house, right, if you pay a tax for this, the size of the house, right, people naturally say, okay, now it's worth it, but later perhaps it's not, right, and they can do their own decisions and trying to make a better usage of a space, right, not necessarily by saying, okay, I'm going to put that as a, you know, burn the house down, sell that to an international investment group, and then they are going to build luxury houses. But perhaps, you know, adapting more to say, okay, now this is going to be a better place for a young family because they have small kids and they have three kids and they can use the space, and perhaps I move to a smaller place and things like that, right? But yeah, it's true that there's problems with that, and especially in Ireland, there has been a massive housing crisis, right? Like there are massive problems with houses. For once, I think that they haven't been building enough houses recently.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of problems, and also, again, from a external point of view, right? The people in Ireland doesn't really like apartments, right? Like apartments is only for young people, students, and things like that.
Yeah.
They offer in apartments that obviously they make a better usage of a space, right? Yeah. Like it's more efficient. It's very low, right? Like getting an apartment is very, there are not many apartments available, right?
Even then the demand when you're looking, I remember when you were looking for the property in your area, the apartments, there wasn't a lot. And when some of the apartments are ridiculously overpriced because they were slightly closer to Grafton Street or slightly closer to the city center. And you're talking about 50, 60,000 at least in a difference. You know, when you kind of think about it, you're close to the city anyways, and you're going to pay 50, 60,000 extra, not just for having an extra room, even just because it's closer to a certain location. And some people do that, because the point is there's not enough selection, Hami, you know. And I remember that because you're looking at the area and you're very familiar. But going back to your Spanish experience, what was the time frame in Spain for you to buy it? And just so that
way
people
faster
can, that's
way faster. Like I think I was, because I bought a house, another apartment in Spain, right, like a few years ago. And I think
we have a property mogul starting here.
I think the whole process since we saw the house, right, until we got the keys of the house, I think it was around 2 weeks.
See, that is a huge difference. Like 2 weeks is unheard of. And, you know, it's impossible when I think about it.
It's impossible. Here it's impossible. But I will tell you why, right? Because I think the why is more important really than the time difference. So first of all, the negotiation is way faster. Right. So normally the process here is that you will put a price that will say, okay, this is the minimum, right? And please give me an offer, right? So you will say, okay, let's say 300,000, right?
Okay.
Which is, I think, is something that for a price for an apartment in Dublin is more or less
the price. Price,
right? You say that, and then you wait for offers, and there's not really like a time frame for that, right? Like you can wait for offers as long as you want, right? So you can say, okay, this is the minimum that I'm willing to accept. Then someone come and say, okay, I will offer you 300. And then they will say, I'm going to wait for 2 weeks more because I think perhaps someone will offer me a little bit more, right? And perhaps they will come, right? But you have that process where people are going to be waiting for that for, let's say, 1 month until they try to find a better offer, right? So it's not a close thing where they say, okay, you have now a week or 2 weeks to get the offers, right? And we will make a decision this day. In Spain, meanwhile, the process is a little bit the other way around, right? So you put the maximum, right? So instead of 300, hoping to get 320, you will say, okay, I will put 330. So the first person to come and say and give an offer, right? They will say, I'm not going to give you 330 because it's too much. I'm going to give you 320.
Okay.
And you can offer a little bit of discount and say, okay, good, I will do that and we will close it right now, right? And then you close it. So even if the price is the same, right, the closing price is the same, in one you say, okay, I want 300, and wait until I get 320. And in the other one, you say, I want 330. And once someone comes with 320, I will close the deal,
mm-hmm.
right? So the person buying gets an idea that they got a discount.
Yeah.
You know, they're bargain and they, you know, negotiate or whatever. And the person selling, they already put, you know, put that the price a little bit higher, right? So the negotiation is faster because they don't really are waiting for anyone to give an offer, right? For a better offer is the first one getting for that.
Can I ask, so say if somebody counterbid you, what would happen then? Would that have delayed matters?
Like normally you don't get that because the first one to offer 320 will win.
It's just the mentality right? there.
It's the mentality there. So you will get more or less it will be the first one to buy to bid will win, right?
Okay.
If they bid enough, right? So if they say 300, you will say, no, I'm going to sell for 300.
Yeah.
And then the other person perhaps can say, okay, 310 and wait a little bit. But normally what happens is that given the way it works,
yeah,
you will see, okay, this they say 330. I know that if I get 320, I will get it, right?
Yeah.
I'm willing to make that bid or not. If I'm willing, I will get the house, right? If I'm not, or I'm fast enough to get that. So it's more like a fast approach mm-hmm. where people needs to move very, very fast. There's another difference.
Is it transparent, Hami? Can you see where the bids are coming from? Or is an estate agent just kind of like in Ireland saying, oh, there's five bidders in the market. You need to up your bid before.
So no, because they will say the maximum. So you know if you're getting the maximum, you will get it, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no competing bidders, right? Like if they were, it was already sold.
Yeah.
Right. So unless you lowball it, right? You say, okay, I'm not willing to pay that much. I think it's worth 300,000.
As opposed if you, to 330. You know,
talk to me in a month.
Yeah.
Which is rare, right? I guess it could happen because people could overvalue the house, but normally with the agent and everything, you will get more or less. So it's priming the speed of selling more over getting like the maximum. Price for it, right?
Did you get mortgage approval in the 2 week time frame as well?
So the way it works the other way around, right? Instead of first getting a mortgage pre-approval, you first get the house and then you search for the mortgage.
Yeah.
Right. Now you need to calculate that correctly because normally you have talked a little bit about the mortgage with the bank and everything, right? Once to be able to successfully bid for a house, you need to pay a deposit, right?
Yeah.
Just like here. But there's a difference that you get a contract, a binding contract with the deposit.
Okay.
So normally what happens is that if they withdraw from the sale, they will have to pay you double the deposit. If you withdraw from the sale, you lost your deposit.
Yeah.
Right? So normally the deposit is around, it could be 10% of the price of the house.
Okay.
Right? So it's a very massive thing saying, okay.
No. And then
we are going to that, right? Like this is very, very, this is going to happen, right? And then you search for the mortgage, but the mortgage approval, because normally you have already been talking and everything, but there's not like a process in the same way. It takes around a week or so. Right?
Yeah.
So they move very fast into asking you everything and you get more. Like here is more deliberate. It takes longer. They ask you more things and everything. Now, when I bought my house, I don't know if right now is different because when I bought my house, it was a time where there were more people like trying to, and it was easy to get a mortgage approval and everything. So mm-hmm. once so
yours
you get
was
that,
prior to the financial crisis.
Yes, it was prior to the financial crisis. It was in 2004. Right?
Yeah, but still 2 weeks is a record. Like, I mean,
yeah, like it was around two weeks, and then. The next stage is formalizing the contract, right?
Yeah.
Making the transaction. The thing is, that's super quick because the contract is a standard contract.
Yeah.
So you have to go to a notary, right? Like the notary is different from the notary in Ireland, right?
Yeah.
Because it's more like a, let's say, a super solicitor. Right?
I know what you mean.
They are sort of ensuring that when they bring a contract to them, they are legally obliged to say, okay, this is a correct contract. There's nothing going against law here. So you do a very extensive pre-check that everything checks out, right?
Yeah.
what happens with that process is, well, first of all, they get a lot of money for very few work because everything is a standard, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is like that is standardized a lot of things, right? So there's not really that much negotiation like here where you say, well, first of all, where are the maps? Where are the things? All that is set in a specific public office, which is the property registry, right?
Yeah.
And everything is there. So they just need to pull all the documentation, write a standard contract and sign the contract. So you go one day with the other person, right? You see them.
Oh, so you see them, yeah.
You see them, yeah. Normally, they also show the house and everything, but you see them, you have to sign with them present, right? So everyone is present in the same table.
Yeah.
You sign all the details, right? One person from the bank is present as well because they need to free the funds, right?
Yeah.
So, and once it's done, they talk to the other people to send us, submit the funds, and then they get open the mortgage for you.
So can I ask, did you get a server for your Spanish property?
No.
That's not a requirement.
No. And I think it's a great idea. But the thing is that that's supposed to be on the property system, right? Like if the house is not ready and whatever, that should be noted in the other place. Now, you can find whatever, right? But normally, most of the houses in Spain are relatively new. Like yeah. Not like here. That you can buy here a house that is 100 years old, right? The same thing happens in Spain, but it's less common than here. Right. And normally they're like apartments. So you are losing a lot of risk because normally apartments are less risky than a house, right? Like the house can have bad foundations. The house can have like a lot of problems.
Yeah.
That in apartments, just because there's many people, right? Normally you have an insurance. Yeah. Normally you have certain regulations mandating you to review the house every X years, whatever. So, you know, like you're dividing the risk. So the risk is more for the whole building, which perhaps is 100 people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have certain conditions to get on that, but it's less individual, right?
Okay.
So it's less risky to really buy an apartment than to buy a house.
Okay. And so look, that time frame, I mean, even if in your case, a 6 months time frame happened in most cases, or actually 3 months, because I know in the UK, they're trying to advance the whole conveyancing and the buying and selling and trying to automate it. Because the whole point is, I think in Ireland, more so, you have estate agents having complete control. You don't know who the other side is. You are told there's five or six bidders and then they push you to increase the price. And there are times I remember that I felt like I was increasing my own price when I seen there was no evidence that there was somebody else increasing their price. Yeah. And it was just because the sellers wanted to have a certain price. But, you know, I wouldn't have raised my price if I knew it was just a seller. But I have, because I was asking them, estate agents, can you give me more details? I don't need names, but can you give me kind of like what kind of situation that these alternative bidders are? Because you kind of think that if they seem to have more deep pockets, there's no point in me being in this bidding race and increasing the price for them unnecessarily and back to the drawing board. I think here in Ireland, there's too much control with estate agents, and a lot of estate agents haven't covered themselves in glory. I have had some very bad experience and also some good experience with estate agents when some of them would come in and kind of say, oh, you know, this is the only property on the market. And then you're on down the road, they're actually selling another property. And when you ask them about, I'll give you an example. We asked them about another property and they're like, oh, that property is never going to be sold. Lo and behold, it was sold before we purchased our own property. Yeah. And we can find this all out on the property register, where people forget that everything, you know, the price you pay for your property is now made publicly available through the property register. So you can be Googling all property. You can Google a property you're interested in to see what was the property sold for. If it was sold, you know, in the last couple of years, it has to be formally registered, Hammy. And so then you can see, oh, okay, the property has increased to, you know, 300,000 plus. So it's now worth 600,000. So I think it's mainly done so that the government can see exactly what tax and liabilities are due, because now people can't hide or manipulate their property prices. Because again, as you mentioned, there's tax to be paid on properties as well, even if it's your principal private residence. That's the description given to, you know, you may have how many two properties, but if you're living in one apartment over the other, that apartment you're living in is legally protected because this is your home. But say you were became bankrupt, they may be targeting the other property, which was probably, you know, used as a holiday rental because it isn't your principal private residence. So that's a concept in Ireland to protect the family home, particularly back in the day where, you know, men would probably mortgage or remortgage the property, and all of a sudden the business endeavors didn't work out. So essentially the banks come knocking on the door. So the wife would be like, wait, we're losing our home. So it's trying to protect, you know, the marital home, the matrimonial home and stuff like that. So that's principal private residence, you know, it's protected. And it's harder why you see, even after the recession, it was difficult for banks to evict people because that was from the principal private residence. Essentially, they were going to be made homeless. So that's the thing, as you said, you know, touching base on history, that is still, you know, impactful. But yes, the property register, it's just a simple Google. You can find all the property prices. So if people are lying to you about the prices they paid, guys, go Google it. It's all available online. But it also educates you in the market. And that's the thing, because I was, when I spoke to a few estate agents, they'll say, that apartment across the road is sold for 20,000 over the asking price. So then that makes you panic, saying, oh my gosh, I just have the money for, you know, the asking price. Now 20,000 people are going more bid. What am I going to do? Then you scramble and think, maybe I can take a personal loan. Maybe I just make an offer. Maybe I beg my parents, get a gift or whatever. And then, you know, but the estate agents were just picking up numbers randomly. And I started, you know, Googling using property register, saying, you told me that property was sold for 400,000. Here it's sold for 350.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
estate agents.
But then the thing is, Hammy, am I going to call these estate agents out when I need them to present my offer to the the seller or the buyer or whatever the situation is? Because they're the middle person and you reluctantly have to agree, even when you realize they're lying and manipulating. And this is all against the code of conduct and ethics of estate agents, because there is an authority out there, but there's not enough enforcement. So if there's not enough enforcement, you know, people are getting away with murder, as in my example, falsifying that there's other bidders. And I knew exactly there was no other bidders, because when I asked him details and I said, okay, I'm not placing any more bids. And then they said, the property price has increased by the opposition. I said, look, we can't afford it. Then all of a sudden, the next day, it wasn't even like a week later, the higher bidder has pulled out, now it's yours. So I'm like, okay, so that was very, you know, usually people take time when they're pulling out of the offer. So that's an indication that, wait a minute, they've been trying to increase the price so they can say, oh, look, I've got, and they also want to say, I've sold the most expensive property in this area, so that they try to get sellers to come to them, as opposed to, you know, competing estate agents who want to get your property and put it on the market, because they get, you know, a percentage of 2.5, 1.5, depending on what you agree. That's the general percentage of commission the estate agent would get. So, you know, and then you have ones who are lying about the property prices that are being sold, ones that are trying to make you buy a property that, you know, you may not necessarily have been your first choice, but no, it's the only property left because the other property you've interested is never going to be sold. And yet you find on the property register 6 months into your, bid of another property that, wait, this property has been signed, sealed and delivered for a certain price, and that the other estate agent just didn't want to give the offer to the other side because she wanted that sale done. And then she wanted, or he wanted, you know, you to buy another property. So they have two guaranteed properties sold, as opposed to, you know, putting interested parties in that one house, and, you know, means that she or he has to do more work and going back. So, like, these are things I've seen firsthand myself in that instance. And the thing is, I would love to give out to them, but the point is, I know if I give out to them, they just blacklist me. So if I'm emailing them, how are you going to prove? Are we going to start going down the legal route and you're going to be in that endless rental property market, which is constantly going up and demanding as well? So you're paying a lot more in Dublin than you would if you owned the property. Do you know that kind of way? So, Hami, there is a lot of discrepancies there. And I think anybody listening to us, you know, feel free to reach out to us. But I know when I speak to some students of mine, and these are postgraduate students, they always say that they have had a negative experience. Like, you never hear anyone saying they had a positive experience in buying it. And in your case, you had a 6 months ideal time frame. And I kept saying, Hami, this is, you know, because I remember you saying you were panicking. I said, Hami, yours is a perfect, it's like, you know, textbook perfect. But 6 months for someone who had come from a 2 week time frame, you know, it's pressure.
It's also, you know, you have also a lot of different things and different stages, because it's not just 6 months where you put something and then you wait for 6 months, right? Like, you have to be doing things during the 6 months.
Constantly,
right?
And it's time. Constantly. It consumes it's very your taxing. Life. It consumes your life, Hami, and it consumes anybody's life. So I always joke, anybody who's buying a property, don't be looking at like the bank's advertisement of a happy couple, a happy family. No, they will.
It's very emotionally demanding. Yes,
they will soul destroy you. You know, estate agent saying, "We are the estate agent of choice. Trust us." No, I'm just like, I do not trust you, but you are the only option. You know, and in fairness, Sherry Fitzgerald have tried to introduce a bidding platform. So that's how they try to sell their service offering. So, you know, if you and I are bidding on a property, you can see bid A from, you know, bidder A, bidder B. So you can see there's some element of transparency and dependency that you have to have a certain. So
is this like an eBay for houses?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So that's what they're trying to. And now there are other companies out there trying to copy what UK conveyancing are doing, so that say your solicitor doesn't even need to meet you. The solicitor says, okay, update your documentation to verify your identity, up a contact with the bank so they can reach out and get copies of the mortgage approval, all of that. So it's all done on a platform. So you get ticks. So you can see, this is the entire process, and you get alerts. So they're trying to automate it. And I think that's a fantastic thing to do, because it might help and speed up the process. But the whole thing is that Ireland is still very much a long way behind England in that instance. You can get a property bought and sold a lot faster, not as 2 weeks as in Spain, but still there's more transparency there. And I can see
there was something that I was missing that in Spain you do that you don't do here, which is evaluation, an independent valuation of the house. So the bank will send, it's not a survey, but it's a guy, a man or a woman, going to the house and valuating the house.
Yeah.
So they normally allowed you to get money up to whatever percentage, I think is 80% of the house, of the valuation. So not necessarily of the price, but of the valuation.
Yeah.
Obviously, in 2004, the valuation were a little higher, right?
Yeah.
Because they sort of include a little bit of the perceived increase of the value, right?
So
if the price is increasing, they will hire the valuation a little bit. So it's an independent valuation. Here is not like they trust you that the price of the house is the price of the house.
But you do have to get a valuer, and they'll give you a list of four or five valuers. And these are just estate agents. You ring and pay them 150 to 250 and say, can you come? And I'll tell you, the valuers we got, because of the fact is, after 6 months, if you haven't got your mortgage and your property purchased, you have to reapply for an extension. That's what happens in Ireland. And as you mentioned, the ideal case, your textbook example, it takes 6 months from buying and selling. Yeah. Most people then shift to, we're moving into a 7 month time frame, so we need to get re-mortgage approval. So again, you have to resubmit documentations and probably get a revaluation for it. So again, another 150, 250 is charged. And in both instances, you know, the value we paid for this, an estate agent who is registered with the bank, they never even seen the property. All they took was took pictures that were available on Daft and said, bang, 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 done. So we were paying people to just sign off because it was registered, but they didn't investigate and say, yeah, this has potential. No, it was just tick, tick, tick. And all information that was available, they didn't even try to take pictures on the inside that weren't available online to make it look like, pictures of the garden, none of that. They just took a picture of the front, which was available on the estate agent that was selling it, DAFT and all these things, which are the
DAFT is an online site to get for rents and houses
in Ireland. And then you have rent.ie for rental properties, but you also find rental properties in daft.ie, but both of them are good for anybody listening and looking at it. But the property register.ie is a good website to get an insight in terms of prices in the area and other similar properties are sold for. Also, citizens information, if you're completely new to Ireland, it's worth just kind of getting an insight in terms of buying and selling property. What does that mean? And going to the various different financial institutions' website to understand the mortgage approval process, because that would be an education. And look, if you also want to, there's a lot of mortgage brokers out there as well. I've had some negative experience with some mortgage brokers, but some people have had good experience. So, the whole point of it that I'm trying to say, Hami, there's not enough transparency. It's too slow, too burdensome. It consumes you, too costly. There's no trust in this system. It's expensive.
Yeah.
A lot of uncertainty. It's not an enjoyable experience at all in terms of that.
Yeah, well, the counterpart in Spain is that the process is more expensive than here, because you have to pay around 7% extra for taxes, right?
Yeah.
So if you buy a house, you have an extra 7% normally taxes that is not included in mortgage, right?
Yeah.
So you have to count on that
and in Ireland there is stamp duty.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're buying a house and then your solicitor gives you a quote of 15,000, people are like, oh my gosh, the legal fees. The poor solicitor, because conveyancing is not a big thing for solicitors. That's just, part of their daily work. They probably get 2,000, 3,000, depending on your solicitor, 3,500 for all the work that's involved.
Yeah, but you get 3% right? It's 3%, right?
No, it depends on the solicitor. I've seen fees being quoted for 2,000 to say 3,500 to 4,000.
Really. No, I mean the stamp duty.
Oh, but the stamp duty, yes, you're right. So if you're buying a property, it's a lot less than the 7% you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't. So if you get quoted a 15,000 euro, you have to understand your solicitor's probably only getting 3,000 or 4,000 at best. The rest is stamp duty. The rest is, a property searches that the solicitor has to do and document that there's no kind of law, legal orders or barring orders against the property or injunctions. And so that's what adds to the cost. So out of the 15,000, most of the rest of the money is paying the Irish government to allow you to buy the property.
Yeah.
So people forget about that, but they just think, oh my gosh, solicitors. And I'm not defending solicitors, but in this instance, I will. I said, they're not getting rich. The 15,000 isn't going into their pockets.
It's a very expensive process. And, buying a house and everything, because you also need to add things like furniture, right?
Moving perhaps costs.
You have to move. You have perhaps to paint, right? Like when I move here, I painted. To make your own perhaps when you buy it, normally when you buy it, it's not in the best shape, right?
Yeah.
Unless you buy a new house. Normally there's things like perhaps because in my case, it was including the appliances, right?
Yeah.
But some appliances may not be in the best.
Same with us. We changed everything.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's normal for you to want to change things, right? Perhaps the furniture, the cabinets in the kitchen are not in good shape, or you want to change them for whatever reason. So it's really a very expensive process, right? And moving, obviously you spend a lot of money, yes, over the next months, yes, furnishing the house, right?
Like, and you feel
and
like
making it your own.
It's an expensive child, go to private education because you don't have any savings anymore. And I know people can say, well, you don't need to spend that much, but it's kind of like you've waited so long to have your home. You're perfectly entitled to it.
My idea on that is that you can't really buy the house or you can't make your house your own overnight, right? Like you shouldn't aim to enter and the first day having everything perfect, right?
Contrary to what these bank advertisements will prove, you know, that the happy couple, I don't know who's happy on move day. By the time the processes end, you're exhausted running up and down between wherever you are.
And normally, you know, like when I moved to the other house, right, we were eating on a cardboard box for like a month, right? Yeah. Because we didn't have like a table. And we had to buy the table later, right? We were searching for a table for a proper one and also saving for the table, right? Because we were like very short on money. I haven't been in that kind of short shortage for this one. But obviously, you know, it's a process, right? That, that you need time. Like very recently, and, you know, Sana knows this, but, you know, this this weekend, the last weekend, I was putting together an IKEA bed for the extra room, right? Because my father is coming and everything. So I was trying to get everything. Yeah. So that took like more than a year, right?
Yeah.
Sure, lockdown, whatever, you know, it was a long process anyway. But, you know, and I still need to get some bookshelves.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I want to do that at some point. So, you know, it's a process that is quite long into getting that. And there's also things that you never expect to happen, right? Like things break, things perhaps they need to be replaced with something because you don't like them that much, et cetera, et cetera. So it's always like a very, very long process, I think, and very expensive.
Yeah, no, and that's true. So, but that's why I'm saying don't look at the advertisements or, you know, these testimonials where I had a great time. I mean, who does have a great time unless you have are filthy rich and have people doing all the worry, running around and doing the documentation. It's like, even on the move day itself, people are like, are you excited? I'm like, I just want it over. Because you're packing. It's not like you can walk in and bang the ideal world and everybody has that. So I would prefer to see more realistic testimonials, realistic conversations, as opposed to even when you talk to certain people, oh, it was a wonderful experience. We love it. I'm like, that wasn't what you were saying to me privately.
I think the experience is not, you know, it's not enjoyable really. But what you enjoy later, you know, when you finish everything and after a month, let's say, you know, a month, you open everything, you put everything in
the majority of what you need to get your life in like, shape of normal.
But let's say like it takes a month, right? Like, because there's always things that, oh, I procrastinate. I don't want to put these yet, right? These books, whatever, I can live with without them for a while and everything. So after a while, when you put everything and everything, there's one of the days that, you know, you're suddenly on the couch and you're looking at something and say like, oh yeah, now I have this and it's nice and it's my space.
I mean, I still can't find certain things. And sometimes I'm just sitting on the sofa, if I'm going through a document or whatever, randomly pops up and I go, did I lose it? Did I unpack it?
Yeah.
You know,
and another thing is like the amount of things that you lose in a move, really. Like there's always things that you will lose.
And the one thing I think about a move is it makes you be brutal. At least I became very brutal. I'm not going to wear these clothes, charity. I'm not going to use this furniture, these items, charity. Like I was forced and I was like, why am I carrying them around with all the moves that I did? I literally became brutal and started. And I was like, I've turned into my mom. I can totally understand when my mom was like, whenever we're moving, I remember like some of my toys and I'm like, don't throw it away. Mom's like, nope, you're not using it. I don't see it. Given to charity. Like I remember I distinctly had an Elmo and it was my favorite toy. Mm-hmm. And I would just, you know, talk to it myself like a strange child that I was. And my mom's like, I haven't seen you use it. I go, no, but I like it. Because sometimes you don't use stuff, but you still have sentimental. She's like, nope, giving it to charity. Because it was in immaculate condition. My mom would wash and clean it. And it was very expensive. And my father bought it. Like it was like in the 90s. So you're talking about probably £100 for a teddy bear, which is an expensive thing in the 90s, you know. And she was like, nope, not using it. Give it to charity, you know. And even all these things. And you just think, I was like, no, why are you doing it? I actually understand. I think she was too kind. She let us keep certain things. I was like, I'd be like,
I'm still a little bit of a hoarder. I don't like to throw things away. My wife is more like, you know, throw these because we are not using it or whatever.
And because the thing is, it's a space, you know, no matter how big the house is. And thankfully, your house is big. I'm just amazed that we've nearly filled every nooks and cranny, Hammy. So I can see like, oh my gosh, I've become back to that person. So it's like, I hope I don't have to move anytime soon, God willing, because I do not want to be going, Hammy. Oh, the move. Because like we just literally, because all our furniture was made and imported. And that was a huge ordeal because it came, you know, they're handmade. Yes, we thought they're beautiful, but it broke our heart, yeah. Both in time, resources, the moves. Even when we moved into the house, we didn't have many furniture because we were sleeping on a mattress because we were waiting for our four-poster bed to come. And then it got stuck in Amsterdam because of the Brexit. Mm-hmm. And the costs were horrendous.
Yeah. Also, you know, like obviously, you know, our experience, well, mine probably not because it was, you know, I just finished that right before all the lockdown and everything. But in your case, your experience obviously is tainted by the fact that
I had all the negatives.
We have lockdown, we have COVID, and right? Like it's not normal times.
As idiots, we said, you know what, that's the house we're waiting for. Let's get bespoke handmade furniture. Yeah. And then we were like, okay, look, there's an element of sadness there, but we love it. But there's also like, oh my gosh, what did we put ourselves into? We sometimes sit down because we're still finishing things off, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just that, you know, okay, you know, Ronaldo, our friend, he's joking. He goes, oh, you love all these kind of things. They go, I did not expect this hardship. If I could tell myself 2.5 years ago before we made the orders of the furniture, mm-hmm. because of COVID and all of those things, you know?
Yeah.
It broke us financially. Like, you know, yeah. It's exceptionally expensive. Yes, they're unique pieces. Perhaps we could have got them cheaper in Ireland, but would they be made catered to our taste? It's the only thing we can say. Everything is custom made to whatever we wanted. Mm-hmm. But Mohammed, it broke our heart. And I think yeah. It is. But, you know, we made a decision. We have to live with it. And the financial commitment was so much. We can't, you know, say no anymore yeah. to it. But in that instance, you know, there's some really nice, unique pieces. But I have to say, we kind of went a bit, you know, decided to make the even more difficult process difficult. Yeah. So I'm saying that at the caveat, but I mean, I'm yet to meet someone in a personal or professional capacity that enjoyed their house purchase or house sale.
Yeah, I think the process itself is not enjoyable at all. Afterwards, you get a little bit of you know, calm, I think. Like for me, it was like super important, like more than this one, because this one, it was a little bit forced by the fact that, you know, that the landlady wanted to sell the house. But the previous one,
of which
in Spain,
the property you were rented, so you kind of had the choice, are you going to rent again? So just to clarify.
Yeah. That, like, the problem is that, you know, renting, it was like, you know, right now renting in Ireland.
I was like don't crazy. Have me. Yeah, I was the person.
It's crazy. I was able to, you know, I was able to, again, to call a little bit of favors and everything to get for the down payment and everything. But the thing with that, like the house in Spain that has been giving me like a lot of mental peace, the fact that you're out of the rental game, right?
Oh,
the
for fact sure.
that because the rental race is that, you don't know what is going to happen.
No. And like in your case, you were there for years and, you know, the landlady is perfectly entitled. She said, you know, it's easy for her to sell on because she needs the money for her, whatever.
And it happened to me, right? Like, so I first, the houses that I've been in Ireland. So the first year I was in a house that was very, very small. So the first year that I came to Ireland, my wife was still in Spain, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have certain problems, etc. So I ended up being for a full year, right?
Yeah.
And it was a house that it was super small. Yeah. Right? For me, it was great because I wasn't really needing that much space.
And plus, you were working most of the time too.
Yeah, but for two people, it was like more and a dog, etc. It was not good. Then we moved to another house that it had a garden and everything, and we lived there for I think 3 years. And then they told us, okay, we are going to raise the rent sensibly, like 30%. Rent increase. And then we said, okay, if this is the rent increase, we are going to move to another place, right?
Yeah.
So we moved to another place. And that one, we were there for 5 years, I think, 4 or 5 years until, 5 years, until they say, okay, we are going to sell, right? So
That's what I hear from when I speak to people too, just when somebody's asking me for advice or guidance. And it's the, you know, every year when the property renewal comes, even though in Ireland, Hammy, you had to be given a longer notice. There's only certain reasons where you can be kicked out of the house. And one of the reasons is if the lady or landlord is moving into the house themselves, they need it for themselves, but they can't just walk in. They have to give you a notice. And I think it's expanded by every month. So traditionally it's 3 months. So every month or every couple of months, as the years go by. So if you stayed 5 years, you had to be given nearly a year plus notice from your landlady to say that we are intending to sell this property. You have the option to buy, or we can move on and put it onto the market. So it gives you the opportunity to time. So there is that protection in place, but it's that uncertainty every year. Okay, is this going to be the year where they're going to, you know, and we have to go back into the move. We're just getting used to the area. And I totally appreciate, which is why people then end up buying property in areas where they wouldn't necessarily have solved themselves. It's just they want that stability.
Yeah, and you get out of that, like, you know that the mortgage is very stable, right? Like, you know how much are you going to pay year by year.
Yeah.
You know that you control more whether you want to move or not, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because you may want to move, but at least you are in control of that. Like, it's not suddenly something that is going to come to you. Like, it's getting that. And yeah, to me, the main thing was, like, you know, stability in terms of I know how much I'm paying. I'm comfortable with that, right? Like, I'm able to pay that much. Yeah. And I'm happy that, you know, I think that even if I change jobs or whatever, I'm going to be paying, you know, able to pay that. And you remove yourself from the problem of, you know, like renting in general, which is, and especially here in Ireland, because every single time you're seen and saying, like, oh yeah, now what it used to be, you know, 1200 now is 1700. And it's like, whoa, oh my God, like how are going to be able to afford that? And, you know, like every time it's moving up, it's, I think that's the thing that taxes you most is the fact that it's always growing. And every time that you see, okay, it's more money for a smaller space in a worse area, right?
Yeah.
And you want to, you know, if it was...
The panic in trying to find an alternative while you probably are working or raising a family. I don't know what the circumstance... It's not ideal. Even when you are looking to buy a property, you're finding the time to do it. Because you want to save the holidays for when you actually do the move and take days off. Do you know what I mean? So it's a catch-22. It's not an easy situation at all. And I think the one thing we haven't touched base upon is actually two things, Hammy, that I want to talk about is recently the Irish Data Protection Commission finally, I'm very critical of their regulatory body, but that's because on an international scale, it's not been great in terms of how she's been protecting or enforcing privacy rights on, you know, EU citizens against these multinational technology companies. That's another matter. You can listen to our podcast on GDPR and privacy. But in this instance, the regulatory body actually called out estate agents because what you found is that the demand has increased so much in light of COVID because now that things have eased down, more and more people have saved up during this entire time because they're not going on holidays, they're not going out. So they said, okay, we'll stay or moved in with their in-laws or family to save up money. And so property people have more money to spend. So the prices have gone back up to the state of when Ireland was pre-recession. So it's up to the boom area where you can see people going 30, 40,000 over the asking price, particularly in these, you know, more exclusive areas like Ratgar, for example. But other prices have increased. They're saying, you know, there's a regular increase of 1,500 on a monthly basis across Ireland in property prices since COVID. Because there's a lot of bent up demand with not enough properties on the market because COVID saw that building sites were stopped and halted, so there's not even new properties out there. But in this instance, so the estate agents in Christians Savills, which is, you know, renowned, they were the estate agent for choice for this new property development for houses. And so they said, as part of becoming, you know, registered of interest and being notified, you had to submit your details such as your mortgage approval, your source of funds, if your gift, and actually provide copies of them onto their database before you're even able to view the property. Because if you don't upload these documentations, they're not going to engage with you. So the question then remains is that proportional? What about the whole data minimization? So now you have an estate agent may have thousands of people's very personal details. Yeah. And the question is, if the estate agent knows that this is your maximum mortgage approval, they may say, well, okay, the property price they're looking at is 330, but I know they've been given a mortgage approval to 350. And I've had first-hand experience of this. then they start to push you to get to the higher amount of your mortgage amount, because again, they sell the property for higher. They're going to be able to use that as a story saying, I've sold the most expensive property in this area, so you should trust me for a seller perspective. So again, the poor buyer is put into a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And so in that instance, asking all these information, and it has a lot of personal details, gift details, you know, shows confirmation. The finally, DPC, because there was huge outrage from a public perspective, and somebody, thankfully, a few people would have complained, they got the DPC to investigate, and the DPC has made a decision that you can't be asking all these questions just for somebody to view. Yes, it's a different thing if the person has placed an offer and it's been accepted. You want to make sure that it wasn't someone being time waster, but you shouldn't be asking someone and preventing the right to view for people who may be interested in saying, maybe I can't afford this first phase of the property, but I want to see the property. Or maybe, you know, I can't fully afford it, but in a couple of months, I should be able to afford it. And maybe I put my deposit down, because as you said, it takes a couple of months at the very least for the close of a contract to happen. So people may be 10,000 short, and they may say in 6 months' time, we would have found that 10,000, for example. So I think that was a great thing from the DPC to clarify, and estate agents, and kind of push back on estate agents kind of going rogue and setting the standards themselves, because, you know, nobody's questioning them because they know the market's there and people are desperate. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is the first time buyers allowance. So this is for people who have never bought before. They're able to get, I think, is it about 10% of the purchase price, is it, Tammy, or up to maximum 20,000?
I think, yeah, it could be that it's something like that.
Yeah, but essentially, without going too specific, it's the Irish government saying if you are buying a property for the first time and it's a new property, you can't be buying an existing property that's being resold, you'll be able to get a certain percentage back of your property price. And it ranges into a couple of thousand. And so if you find new properties are falling within this remit, what happened was, Hammy, say a property was 300,000. Mm-hmm. Now it went to 320, 330 because the property developer. So again, the Irish government, while trying to help, actually further manipulated the property market, because it's forcing people to buy new properties because people may say, well, I don't need to have as high of a deposit that I would expect. If I go buy a new build property and then kind of strangleholding the secondhand property market. You and I bought a house that wasn't new build. They're new, like is in the past couple of years built, but because they're not in the new, we couldn't avail of the first time buyers. So I think the initiatives, I still question the Irish government. I think it's just all over the place.
I think it was also a measure to try to stimulate the building of new houses, right? Like I think there's a lack of new houses. Like I think everyone agrees on that. Like the problem is building enough. Obviously, it's not easy to build new houses, etc. And especially at the rate that Dublin is growing, right? Because Dublin is growing. It has a lot of workers coming from Europe. Especially in certain industries, people having money, right? Like IT, etc. And, you know, it needs to grow, but the problem is that those kind of developments are not easy to do. And again, people don't like apartments, so it's not like they're going to build those kind of Soviet-looking big apartments for 500 people, right?
But the funny thing is, right, what people don't understand in Ireland is that the gardens are really getting smaller and smaller in these new-built houses, right? Yeah. So you can get a nice patio in the apartments. Also, the square footage of an apartment may roughly be the same as house. But people just think it's a house in Ireland and thinking it's like, you do know that it's probably cheaper for you to buy the apartment, which is probably more square footage and you have a patio. But it is.
I think the apartment I have in Spain. So the apartment I have in Spain is not in a big city. It's like in a small village. It's an apartment anyway.
But it's close to Madrid. It's a suburb.
It's not really a suburb. It's 100 kilometers away. Right? Yeah. But
like Kildare and Wicklow. Sorry to interrupt. Kildare and Wicklow, the property prices are through the roof. We were looking at it.
It could be like that. And actually, that was our point, right? Like we move away as far away from Madrid as possible while we could still go to that. And, you know, the size of it is probably the size of the apartment that I'm in, the house that I was before, combined, probably bigger than that, right?
So you're probably talking about 130 square meters?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like 120, 130.
Which is the standard price of all new built four-bedroom houses in Dublin.
Like, and it's two-bedroom. So the thing is, everything is like massive, like two-bedroom, two.
Now
two,
I understand further why your wife said, oh, the apartment in Ireland is small, because you guys have a luxury, massive two-bedroom, 130 square foot size equivalent, and that's what four bedrooms they fit into Ireland.
It will be like it should be a three bedroom, but the owners, when they, you know, they were building the house, they decided it was a two bedroom, so the living room is like massive. It's very, very big, and the bedrooms are also quite big, and even the restrooms are very big,
like
the toilets.
It's luxury.
I mean, it's not luxury for the location that they are, right?
Like, I know, when we're comparing Ireland, because if you were to buy a similar in Wicklow and Kildare, you might as well be buying in Dublin because the prices are ridiculously high. Yeah. And we were looking,
and it will be a house, right? Like, to me, for example, one thing again that I had to sort of wrap my head around in Ireland when I came here is that there are houses that are small. Right.
Yeah.
And you have a terrace house that is really actually quite small. Right. It's perhaps 50 square meters. Right.
And your apartment 50, 60, is bigger.
And an apartment, right? It could be 80, could be 100. Right. Yeah. So it's not necessarily, because in Spain, a house is more like a luxury thing. Like there's not many people living in houses, individual or even terrace houses.
Yeah.
It's way more common that people live in apartments, even in smaller villages or whatever. Well, here in Ireland, the vast majority of people live in a house with a garden, big or small or whatever. But the thing is, you know, to me, a house is always big, right?
Yeah. And that's the same with me.
And a garden is always big, but here is not really. Like, it's just could have like a minimum space.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And the thing is, like, in your case, like, you're not too far. You're the equivalent of your apartment is the equivalent of Wicklow or Kildare, or Port Leash or Leash.
Even Leash, right? Like, there's people living in Leash that comes every day, and Leash is really far away.
But there's a motorway. So the thing is, the property prices have all increased, because we were looking at it. It's across the border. It's not just Dublin, because people have realized we can live in Kildare, have a lot more greenery, because the houses are traditionally more bigger in those counties than you'd say in Dublin. But they're becoming smaller and smaller, particularly new builds, because they're like, wait a minute, people are all trying to migrate and get some sort of, you know, country visit, but still be directly close to Dublin's amenities and all of those things. So property prices are not just crazy in Dublin. Like, they were saying that recently, I read an article that the highest growth in the property prices was Drogheda and Dundalk.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of
people, Dundalk is really far away.
Yeah, but because of the motorway and you're paying tolls and all that, but it's still people increase the price. So in Ireland, it's like the neighboring counties also see the Dublin benefit demand. But then you have counties that are basically people go back home for nostalgia, and with the remote working, the new broadband plan that's going to see an increase. Even the countryside property prices are increasing, and there's simply not enough properties out there, because, you know, there was a baby boom in Ireland, you know, where people had multiple, instead of mass migration, people started saying, you know, we're settling back in Ireland. So the number of houses are not as extensive. So, you know, people may have had 10 brothers and sisters, but all those brothers and sisters may have probably have migrated abroad in some shape or form, might come back, buy a house, and then their kids. But then the numbers of property being created to meet that demand is going lower and lower. COVID-19, the price of building materials has went through the roof. Brexit, what happened in the Suez Canal, has actually delayed implications that we're still facing. So, you know, these have to be encountered through the increase in the new property prices of new developments. And so that's going to frustrate people more. It's not an enjoyable experience. Do I say people good luck with it? But the advice I'd give it away is that it's not an enjoyable experience, you know. You know, I would love to have a house in city centre, Rackar, all those places, but I'm not going to spend 1.5 million on a house that is half the size of what the house I have here.
I can't spend 1.5 million, even if I wanted.
unless I win the lotto. But other people have got there because of inheritance, family, all of those things. But I just couldn't justify, because we were looking at Greystones for a while, and I just couldn't, Tammy, justify half the price or half the square footage of our house was, you know, 550 plus. So to me, I'm like, I'm not moving to a smaller place for double the price. I want a proper place that I could have, like, you know, things that I've always wanted. Like, I have a commercial cinema popcorn machine at home. I've only used it when we had friends and family over before COVID, so it's very little. But the point is like, you know, it was a long, hard road. It was not an easy process. We weren't gifted anything. Nothing fell through right, you know. But at least we've got here towards the end. But the thing that I say is, I wasn't looking at the Irish government saying, give me more money. I was just saying, please reduce my taxes. That's what I would prefer.
But I think that the main thing for people, you know, starting the process, right, if someone is thinking about buying and everything, is, well, first of all, know the process, right? Like talk to people to understand the different stages and everything, because it's sort of a marathon, right? Like you need to be mentally prepare for that and willing. I think for me, at least, it was like very, because you always have something to focus about. You were quite focused, and but at the same time, emotionally, it's very draining. Right?
So because, I'm smiling here because I also want to say, with the added comment to your advice, is be prepared to have severe fights with your significant other.
Yes.
Even your family and friends. Because you can be in the mood after having a bad day. So, you know, just be prepared that. I think anybody in the property price market, I'm like, I take a mental note, they're going to have some bad days. They're going to have rants.
Yeah. And especially if they have any kind of saying about the house or whatever, right? Because there's always a lot of disagreements of, is this the right place or not, right? Like, obviously it needs to be, if you have a significant other and you're moving together, you have to agree that both like the house, etc., right? But that's not the only argument, right? Like, after that, it's like, what is the color of the rooms? What is the furniture that you're going to get? Yeah. And there could be more.
Where is the money going to come? Why are you working so hard? Why are we working so hard?
Is that, you know, I want to have the popcorn machine? Good usage of the money or not, right? Like, or the, I want this table, but it's a little bit too big. I think it's too big for the room.
But I want it because I've always wanted it. So
exactly. I always wanted it because, you know, look how beautiful it is, right?
So again, going back to the advertisements, it's not a happy couple or happy family. Yeah. I would love if they showed a couple fighting on move day, fighting to agree on the house, because that is just so raw and realistic and refreshing. I don't care about, you know, what they try to do is these ethnically diverse couples and families. They do that. I see that, and all I think about is, marketing. They're trying to show how friendly you are to all, you know, creeds, colors, religions. And I'm no, show me the reality.
You're a multi-ethnic marriage,
I know, but so. I'm just like, nah, it doesn't do anything for me. Do you know that? I'm just like, you're just pushing it down my throat. I would prefer if they showed reality. That, you know, even if they have a little clip of saying, you know, one bank refused them, because it does happen, another bank refused them for mortgage, and you don't need to say the bank's name. And then one bank came to the rescue, but, you know, the terms may be more expensive, but it still gave you the mortgage approval that you wanted. That's a realistic ad, as opposed to, you know, laughing and joking. I was like, I didn't experience any of that, have you? And I know the process.
I love that there was an advertising that was showing the move, and the move was basically getting a kid on a car and then moving to the new place.
Yeah,
they have like the boxes there and everything, but everything is already,
it's so immaculately, you know, clean. And, like, you don't even think about disinfecting things. Like, I disinfected the whole house. We changed door handles. We changed toilets.
And in my case, we paid for professional cleaning.
Yeah,
right?
So all of those things. But, you know, when the person, they move there, everyone comes in and they're comfortable. And I'm just like, you know, they don't think that's reality. So I would rather them focus on that. If I seen that advertisement, I mean, banks, call me. I'll tell you exactly what the story is, you know, and I will direct it. You probably get more of a, you know, and I can just imagine all the tweets saying how refreshing, how realistic, you know, showing somebody struggling for years to save up money, living with their in-laws, their family members. That's the real story.
Yeah.
Do you know, of the average person.
Yeah, that normally you are, with your parents or whatever, and you need to move to another place, or perhaps even showing like cramping things, right? You know, you don't have enough space and you move to a bigger house.
A progression. Like,
yeah,
sort of
progression. Yeah.
Like, I remember me and my sister stayed in a studio apartment in Rakar, and we literally had one double bed. The kitchen and the sitting room was in front of us. Like, that's how small it was. And now, we're paying around 700 back then, which is a couple of years ago. And now it's like 900 euro because it's freshly painted. And you're just like, oh my gosh, that apartment, Hammy, is not even this. My office / living room is bigger than the apartment. Because you see where my office is here? That was the bathroom. And then the rest is the double bed and the kitchen. So literally.
Yeah, like the first house that I also moved, like the first apartment I moved, it was also like really small. Like it was super small. the kitchen was like nothing. Like it was super small. And the bathroom, if I was sit on the toilet, right, my knees will hit the wall.
Yeah.
Right. So it was like super, super small. But hey, you
get there.
Hopefully you get there, you improve and everything. Yeah, yeah. But moves is just like so awful. And the thing is that you always have like so many things that you never expect to have, right?
And there's always going to be problems. I think that could be for another discussion. And I think people might think we're very pessimist, but if you can hear, there's a tone of laughter. This is just dark humor. It's, destroyed us, our soul and the support.
And I think so probably you're going to be happy with the ending result, right? Like after you have the house, it's going to give you a lot of that peace of mind to say, okay, this is my house. I control the process. I have a mortgage that I can afford, hopefully, right?
And like, that you can control who can come in, come out, who has the rights over the property.
You have a lot of good things. You can paint it however you want. You can put the furniture that you want and everything. The only thing is that it's not really like, oh, I move and everything is perfect, right? Like, no, there's a process. It's exhausting. A lot of things that are worth it are exhausting, right? But it's just that it's not perfect process, right? It's very tiresome, and probably everyone that moved through that is like, oh yeah, it was awful. But finally, I'm happy that I move, and I get the new house.
I always said that to people. It's like you're always going to get second, third, fourth guesses, saying should I not? And then if it's not you, if you're in a couple. It gives you significant doubts even more. But the whole
and even the fact that, right, like you're going to get a mortgage and it's like, okay, am I ready to be paying to this bank for 30 years? Yeah. Oh my God.
But you are allowed to change after a couple of years your bank.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
It's the deal
that you're getting into, right? It's and normally when you think about that 30 years, it doesn't fit your head, right? Like you don't think 30 years ago or whatever, when it started. If you think 30 years ago, that was in 1991, right? Like it was like a long time ago. And perhaps it was, if you start paying a mortgage in 1991, you will end that now, right?
So yeah, it's like, but then you're also old and you're like, now I have money, I'm older.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's a process that, if you're can do it, right? Like it's good if you think that buying a house is good for you, because obviously renting also have their own set of advantages in terms like you're more mobile, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're moving from one place to another and you like to travel perhaps and move like if you're in Europe, like there's the opportunity to do that, right? Like being in Ireland for a few years, be in Germany for a few years, be in Austria, be in Sweden, be in Spain, in Italy or whatever, and move around, right? And for example, your work, you're researching a university and you move from one to another, right? Because you get the new contracts that are different in different universities and you need to be moving together. You're not going to buy a house, right? Because you're now in the University of Modena and tomorrow in the University of Dublin or whatever.
But we just kind of wanted to talk about the Irish experience and all the negatives. But ultimately, if you want to go through it, it's worth it all in the end. That's how I'll end it.
Yeah. So, I think we scared them enough.
It's worth it. The pain is worth it.
And we get a little bit of, describing how the process is, what are the caveats and what are the, and especially, be prepared for, a very long process with a lot of steps, a lot of frustrations along the way.
And on a lot of hiccups on the way.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of things that you don't know what is happening, but, you know, keep a positive energy and be proactive. I think it's important to be pushing for it all the time.
Be the driver as opposed to being complacent, my solicitor or my estate agent. No, you need to drive them.
And yeah, you need to be pushing because you're the one that gets the interest in moving.
You want it,
as soon as possible and everything. So, you know, I think it's good for that.
So thank you for listening.
And you can follow us by searching Wrong Side of Life Podcast in the internet.
See you soon.